Good afternoon, everyone. Council will come back to order. Would you call the roll, please, Carla?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Saltzman? Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Welcome, everyone. I think Commissioner Saltzman will be back momentarily. Commissioner Fish is out of town. And would you read item 318, please?
Prohibit the use and purchase of neonicotinoid pesticides by the City of Portland, amend integrated pest management strategies, and urge retailers operating within the city to label plants, seeds, and products containing neonicotinoid pesticides.
Mr. Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. Very pleased to introduce this ordinance. It continues my goal of having healthy parks and healthy Portland, because the City of Portland mostly uses these neonicotinoids in our city parks. And so I've been working with our staff and have come up with this proposal. Greatly appreciate everybody being here, all of the email input that we've had, and invite Tom Bazell, my chief of staff, to come forward to explain the proposal.
Tom Bazell, chief of staff for Commissioner Fritz. I'm just going to go over the ordinance and the exhibit just to give you a rundown on exactly what's in it. And it won't take a whole lot of time here. So the purpose is to eliminate from the city government use the purchase and use of neonicotinoid insecticides. The reason why this is that there's mounting evidence that indicates the neonicotinoids have been found to be harmful to beneficial insects, such as pollinators, and consequently to other animals in the food chain. Pollinators represent a canary in the coal mine effect with our ecosystems, and the mounting evidence points to problems with continued use of these chemicals. The general prohibition in this ordinance is to basically direct that the use of any neonicotinoid or nicotinoid-like systemic persistent pesticide is prohibited on land owned or operated by the City of Portland, including public right-of-ways. This prohibition applies to seed dressings, soil treatments, foliar sprays, and other types of applications. Exceptions to and the policy directives regarding this are found in Exhibit A. So I'm going to go through the exceptions now, which there's three exceptions. And the first one is related to the rose midge, which is a insect which causes damage to roses in our parks. And so we're developing a program, a pilot project in the actual exhibit, which I'll cover a little bit in a second here, to try and help with this problem. So right now there is limited use of imidacloprid, I don't know if I said that correctly, but that's one of the neonicotinoids, and that's been used to control this pest. And we're looking to see if we can find alternative ways. So the pilot project basically will have test beds in one of the rose gardens that has the rose midge. And parks will utilize a balanced team of consultants to agree on the types of protocols to use in the test, and then alternatives to the neonicotinoids will include IPM practices, physical, biological, and other environmental methods. There will also be signage posted that will educate people about what that testing is all about, and then there will be a reporting mechanism through which we can get that information back to the commissioner in charge. Exception number two deals with buying of plants and products that basically have neonicotinoids in them. And oftentimes we have our plants that we buy and the seeds that we buy by the city basically are already coated with this type of insecticide. And we're trying to basically phase this out. And so that would require that we actually come up with a plan and on how we want to phase that out. And that time period for phasing it out is set to be December 1st of 2017. It'll take some time for retailers and nurseries to actually jump on board and figure out, go back to a time when they did not have plants that were coated in neonicotinoids. The other aspect is that we will, of course, try and eliminate that as soon as we possibly can. Exception number three is that any use of neonicotinoid class pesticide under the contract could only occur with, you know, strict adherence to the city's integrated pest management program protocols. And some of those protocols that would be amended and rewritten are to address this impact from the neonicotinoid pesticides, or insecticides as they're called. And other parts of that would be that that if you wanted to use the pesticides only, they could only be considered for destructive pests. And you would have to get a decision by the commissioner in charge to basically use the neonicotinoid, and you would have to have had reviewed all alternative approaches. There is also a notification procedure that's been put in place for site-specific types of use of the insecticide. Here are the rest of the council, basically be it resolves or directions that are in the ordinance. And this is pointing out the four primary neonicotinoids that are being prohibited, and also to continue to point out that there are other insecticides out there that are neonicotinoid-like in their behavior and have the same sort of persistent systemic qualities. Within 4 months of the enactment of this ordinance, the city shall notify the public of this prohibition, and it will be done on the City and Parks Bureau website. And then it will have information about what this is all about in terms of trying to protect the pollinators. And Parks and Recreation shall provide a plan to the commissioner to phase out all purchase of commercial nursery stock, trees, and other plants, which I described earlier. And the city shall transition with current neonicotinoid use to alternative practices and materials and the reduction of these harmful insecticides in the IPM program. This transitioning will be to basically begin developing alternatives to their use and also to address pests, which will include the development of test plots, which I described earlier. Also, organic approaches will be included in those alternatives. Additional directives related to that transition is the management plan for the rose midge, and then the purchasing plan for plants on a citywide basis in the future, and then seeking out alternative methods on all city property to use of these insecticides. And that is the end of the presentation. And do you have any questions of me?
Sort of a threshold question for me, and that is, this may sound like a strange comparison, but we heard some discussion not long ago about e-cigarettes, and it used to be that we could count on the Food and Drug Administration to sort of screen out harmful products. That doesn't seem to be working as well anymore on the food and drug side of things. Is it also fair to say that we can't really count on the federal regulators in this arena as well, like we, at least like I thought we could?
Well, of course, that's the subject for debate.
Yeah.
The European Union banned these products in 2013. So there are governments elsewhere who've recognized the danger of them, mm-hmm. and it seems to me to be more prudent to err on the side of caution than to wait for somebody in the Federal Drug Administration or elsewhere to say, no, it's a bad thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. But they used to be, it seems to me, they used to be more aggressive at the federal level.
Yeah, I think you'll hear some testimony from Audubon and others comparing this to DDT and other products that were thought to be safe to start off with, and then we found out later that they're not.
Yeah, okay, good, thank you. Other questions, Steve, do you have one?
Yeah, I received a question from some advocates of earlier phase out asking why Parks and Rec couldn't have a complete phase out by December of 2016 as opposed to December 2017. So I just wanted to hear a response to that.
I think that we looked at that. We looked at all different kinds of time frames. I think that we came to the conclusion that in cycles of planting and actually working with the plants themselves, planting them and observing any sort of real impacts, that it would take a longer time frame to really get any results.
And another question is, I mean, there apparently is some debate in the scientific community about whether these pesticides are uniquely damaging to bees, and some people argue that in Europe that people have reverted to using older pesticides that are even worse, and I mean, I don't have an informed opinion on that, but my impression is that what Parks is planning to do is not replace this with other pesticides, but try to use more sort of organic managing practices. Is that correct?
Well, we have a panel that will be able to probably dig a little deeper on that issue, but in terms of our IPM program, we already are in a phase where we try not to use herbicides and insecticides as best we can. So we already come from that approach, and Parks, I think, does a pretty good job in that degree.
Other questions? Tom?
Does Portland Parks and Recreation support this?
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks, Tom. You have a panel to call, Commissioner?
Yes. Could our panel come on up, please? We have Lisa Arkin from Beyond Toxics, Amy Code from the Xerxes Society, Laurianne Bird from the Center for Biological Diversity, and Micah Meskel from Audubon. I'm not sure who's going first, so have at it. State your name for the record each time. Thank you.
Thank you so much. My name is Lisa Arkin. I'm Executive Director of Beyond Toxics. And first of all, I want to thank all of you for holding this public hearing today, and thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for bringing this issue forward. We appreciate it. Just for the record, Beyond Toxics is a statewide environmental health organization dedicated to protecting communities, people's health, and our environment from toxic exposures. We strongly support the passage of the proposed ordinance to ban the use of neonicotinoid pesticides and plants that are treated with neonicotinoid pesticides. And by adopting an ordinance to ban them on your public lands, the commissioners will be displaying leadership to protect bees and other pollinators who have undergone long-term declines. These losses in our bee and pollinator populations are not sustainable given the vital role that bees play in our agricultural system and economies. This ordinance is especially commendable because it encourages retailers operating within the city of Portland to accurately label plants, seeds, and other products that have been treated with neonicotinoid pesticides and to phase away from their usage. Notably, Portland would join other large cities that have passed strong ordinances to ban neonicotinoid pesticides. To date, the cities of Seattle, Spokane, Olympia, Eugene, even Cannon Beach have banned these products on public property, and there are other cities as well. They are being hailed as bee-friendly cities, and I can see Portland taking its place among them. Germany, France, and Italy have banned neonics outright, and neonics is a short way of saying neonicotinoid pesticides. Scientists specializing in pollinator health at Oregon State University are urging extreme caution and, whenever possible, reducing or ending any use of neonicotinoids. These actions are in alignment with a recent presidential memorandum establishing a federal task force to address the crisis of diminishing pollinator populations, as well as new scientific evidence finding conclusive proof that neonicotinoids are a large part of the problem of bee colony decline. So why is it important for Portland to take this action now? Bees and other pollinators are essential for two-thirds of the food crops humans eat every day. Last year, U.S. beekeepers reported losing 30 to 40% of their hives. And according to a study by the United Nations, of the 100 crops that provide 90% of the world's food, 70 of those 100 are pollinated by bees and require bee pollination or another pollinator. And those just aren't any type of crop. They're fruits and vegetables and nuts that we all put on our table to feed our family and provide the basis of a healthy, diverse diet. So I'm wondering, probably almost everyone in this room, and perhaps you as leaders of the city, grow food or support community gardens or are interested in a local food economy. And that will be dependent upon our pollinators. And I want to take just one moment to say we're not talking only about honeybees in a hive, and I do have a hive in my backyard. We're also talking about solitary native bees and bumblebees. These solitary bees have one queen who's also the mother of an entire brood. And if that one queen mother dies because of an exposure to a neonicotinoid, the entire brood, generations to come, are decimated from the loss of that one queen bee. So while a commercial beekeeper may take a hive and divide it to get multiple hives to support a commercial operation, or where in the case of my backyard hive, if I lose a queen, I could probably get another one from a beekeeper, this is not true with our native bees, the Oregon-born and raised bee. And I know that when I personally observed an egregious poisoning in Eugene, where tens of thousands of bumblebees died, I had to see these gorgeous creatures and ladybugs too on the ground in convulsions and quivering because these are neurotoxins. So all those bumblebees will never make it back to their hive to support their family. You might hear also from representatives today from nursery associations or chemical lobby groups that farmers need every tool in the toolbox to battle pests. And that sounds reasonable enough on the face of it, but a government's entity, a government's responsibility, first and foremost, is the protection of public safety and health and the sustainability of future generations. Your concerns are quite different. You don't have to go with the cheapest and the most risky of practices. That's why we see in the true crux of the matter that Portland can join those other cities that have adopted bans, as well as the United States Fish and Wildlife Service that has banned the use of all neonicotinoids on wildlife refuge lands to protect our waterways, our soil, and beneficial insects. And I think about smoking cigarettes. Who would have imagined today, or who would have imagined maybe 15 years ago, the kinds of knowledge we now have about the impacts secondhand smoke has on children? First, we started with battles over whether or not to label cigarette boxes. Then we banned it in federal buildings. Then we banned it in state buildings and then in city buildings. And now, you probably have heard on the radio, Oregon has smoke-free parks.
In Portland, too.
Yes, and now we have bans on smoking near buildings because of the knowledge we have about secondhand smoke. And I know that neonicotinoids are going to follow this path. They're systemic, they're long-lived in the environment, they're dangerous, they're risky. I want to close by talking a little bit about human health. So this is a new research area that has been taken on by a number of scientists. A 2013 study titled Qualitative Profiling Quantification of Neonicotinoid Metabolites in Human Urine reported troubling evidence that neonicotinoids are showing up at high levels in common foods and that their presence may result in symptoms of neurotoxicity in children. I want to quote very briefly so you don't have to take my word for it. The results of this study suggest that universal use of neonicotinoids would cause unintended exposure to neonicotinoids in children who are more sensitive to neurotoxicants because of their neural development. So because these are systemic, you can't wash them off. They're being found in the very fruit, the fleshy parts of fruits and vegetables, and they don't go away. So you can't cook them out. You can't wash them out. They are there. So in closing, I'd like to again commend you for considering this issue and say that bee poisoning incidents and the human health risks point to the grave threat that neonicotinoids pose. It is critical that governments, homeowners, and pesticide suppliers act now to prevent ecosystem decline through the use of these products in our environment and to prevent specifically pollinator die-off. The City of Portland has the opportunity to be responsive rather than reactive and to create public spaces that are safe for bees, butterflies, birds, and children. Thank you for taking action that will align with the city's values of sustainability, local food production, healthy families, and environmental stewardship. I'd like to turn it over to Amay Code from Xerces Society.
Hi, my name is Amay Code. I'm the Pesticide Program Coordinator at the Xerces Society. And just to reiterate, thank you for taking up this conversation. It's something that Portland needed to bring up. We have an amazing environmental credibility in this city. We've done so much for our communities, for our children, and our IPM program really shows our leadership. So this feels like a really natural step within that IPM effort to reduce the use of these pesticides. I'm going to focus in on some of the risks that we're seeing and why it is that maybe some of the battery of tests that our federal government undergoes and the process that we undergo at the federal level might have actually did miss many of the concerns, and how we can, as a city, be more nimble, move through this, and be more protective. I have greater detail in my written comments, and I won't even be able to scratch the surface, but we'll see what we get to today. You know, clearly here in Oregon, we know the risks of neonicotinoids. We've had 7 incidents, 6 of them in the Portland area. And what's not known about those incidents is the vast majority of them, they followed the federal regulations, yet we still had bee die-offs. There were record-keeping errors. There were other minor violations, but they were following those labels in most instances. Some of these applications happened weeks to months prior to the bees coming on the tree and being in bloom and causing the die-offs. So these, again, they're systemic. They're long-lived. It's not just an application when a bee is present that's going to cause this harm. It's pretty significant. And the state of Oregon took great strides and actually created new rules that really do address those acute bee die-offs. And we're really thrilled. Hopefully in 2016 we won't see that. But unfortunately, those die-offs really are the tip of the iceberg. When we look at neonicotinoids, at such low levels, they're causing very subtle but very devastating effects to our native bees and to our managed bees. I'm not going to be here to say that they are the only issue that our bees are facing. Xerces Society is working on the ground all the time trying to increase forage, trying to improve their nutrition, and do so much more for our native bees. But this is one of the factors that we need to be considering, and Portland has the ability to address it. So just to give a couple of examples of some of these subtle yet devastating effects, and they're often termed sublethal. So one of the things we've seen both in honeybees, bumblebees, multiple times in many different studies, many different scenarios, that application rates that would lead to contamination levels that we would expect to find from legal application rates are causing bees to, it's hindering their ability to forage. They're bringing back less food. A lot of these are showing about a 30% reduction in forage. If you can imagine bringing back 30% less food to your colony, it's going to have a devastating effect on that colony. Another really key subtle effect that isn't currently evaluated by our federal government that we need to be looking at is the production of queens. What we're seeing, both again in our bumblebees, we're seeing they're producing fewer queens from low-level exposures to neonicotinoids, levels that we would expect to find in plants after treatments from legal applications. So your queen bee is your colony for the next year. And if we're seeing up to 80% reduction in queen bees, it's going to be devastating for our populations. Portland absolutely has the ability to be more nimble. Our federal government is evaluating this. But they have to take their time. They're dealing with pesticide uses across the country on hundreds of different crops. Portland can take this and really be leaders. And I think the reality is we are grounded in integrated pest management. I spent a number of my years working on integrated pest management in our school systems. And having that background will allow the city to make the right choice when we move away from neonicotinoids and not just move to something else that could be of risk. We really have the ability to look at all the things in the toolbox and not just the chemical tools that we have. Very quickly, I think this is an excellent ordinance. Xerces Society supports it. We are interested potentially in Exhibit A. There might be ways to tighten and strengthen. We have a pilot project now in place, which I think is excellent, but I wonder if it isn't just a part of the larger issue where we really want a full transition plan. So we bring in technical experts, and we help the city move away, because a pilot project can be very discreet, and it might not solve the problem. So it's something to think about. Also, really having a strong measurement of our success and having benchmarks. Let's find out what our contractors have done and our city has done over the last 3 to 5 years using neonicotinoids, and use that to tell the story into the future of the success we've had. So those are some of the ideas. And again, thank you so much. I'm really thrilled to be here and to have you discussing this.
Welcome. Mayor Hales and members of the Portland City Council, thank you for being here again today. My name is Micah Muskell, and I'm the Conservation Assistant at the Audubon Society of Portland. We want to first express our appreciation to Commissioner Fritz and her Chief of Staff, Tom Bizot, for their leadership on this effort. The Audubon Society of Portland, with over 15,000 local members, works to promote the enjoyment and understanding and protection of birds and the wildlife in Oregon and across the Pacific Northwest. We strongly support passage of the ordinance to ban the use of neonicotinoid pesticides or plants treated with neonicotinoid pesticides on lands owned by the City of Portland, and to encourage retailers operating within the City of Portland to accurately label seeds and other products that have been treated with neonicotinoid pesticides. Neonicotinoids are persistent and widely used pesticides that are causing well-documented harm to wildlife, and in particular, pollinators. This ordinance represents a significant step forward in protecting the native biodiversity of Portland, as well as the people who use our city's public lands. In enacting this ban, Portland joins Seattle, Spokane, and Eugene in banning neonicotinoids. It also joins the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which in 2015 announced a ban of use of neonicotinoids on over 150 million acres of public land.
So, Micah, since we have the written testimony, which Bob Salinger also emailed to us all this morning, perhaps you could just summarize rather than reading it all into the record, because it is now part of the record.
Okay. Thank you. So as you mentioned before with DDT, neonicotinoids are very similar in that they are persistent in the environment. And this is an especially big problem for pollinators, but also for birds, as the neonicotinoids are bioaccumulated as they both prey on infected insects, but they are also accumulated it through the ingestion of seeds that have been treated with neonicotinoids. And some of the dramatic impacts with neonicotinoids are chronic exposure to neonics can have significant sublethal effects, including decreased fecundity and partial paralysis. They also destroy the insects, as mentioned, which they depend on for survival. While we strongly support the adoption of this ordinance, we do have some concerns that the attached exhibit potentially leaves the door open to continued use, and we'd like to flag a few sections which we believe could be strengthened. Specifically, we recognize the problem that the rose mitch represents a special challenge in terms of eliminating all use of neonicotinoids in city property, and understand why the city feels compelled to institute a transition program specifically for public rose gardens. We also believe that it is important to recognize that the idealized image of a perfect rose may be one that is dependent upon use of toxic chemicals. We believe the public has become much more understanding and supportive of the concept that the vegetation in healthy and pesticide-free parks may be a bit browner than once considered acceptable. The priority should be placed on human and ecological health, not aesthetics. The advisory committee that was convened by Portland Parks and Rec in transitioning Rose Gardens away from neonics should be a technical advisory team as opposed to a balanced stakeholder group, as they are specialized and are thus experts on the issue. And then we also recommend that the city put a cap of a two-year cap on the pilot project as opposed to 2 to 4 to really set a proactive time frame to really find a solution. So in closing, we urge the City Council to approve this new ordinance to protect pollinators, other wildlife, and other communities, and look forward to working with the city on successful implementation. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Lorianne Bird, and I'm the Environmental Health Director at the Center for Biological Diversity. I'm here today to express my strong support for this ordinance. This common sense approach is needed to protect the very web of life that makes this place so special. I especially want to express my appreciation to Commissioner Fritz and Tom Bizeau for their leadership on this important issue. I'm here on behalf of the Center for Biological Diversity, a nonprofit organization with offices in Portland and elsewhere. At the center, we believe that the welfare of human beings is deeply tied to nature, to the existence of a world of a vast diversity of wild animals and plants. Because diversity has intrinsic value, and because its loss impoverishes society, we work to secure a future for all species, great and small, hovering on the brink of extinction. We want those who come after us to inherit a world where the wild is still alive. So the very purpose of pesticides and insecticides is to kill things, living things. And there's no question that the targeted use of neonicotinoids is effective at killing things. Similarly, there's no question that DDT was effective at killing things. However, we as a society decided that its impacts were unacceptable. As a result of that decision, bald eagles, our nation's symbol, have recovered from the brink of extinction and are now thriving. Now we as a society must take similar action on neonicotinoids, recognizing that their impacts are unacceptable, and bring our pollinators back from the brink of extinction. There is no question that neonicotinoids are causing serious harm to wildlife. Nearly every day a new study is published showing how they are harming various species. We are all familiar with the acute impacts of neonicotinoids from the 7B die-offs that I mentioned, incidents where up to 50,000 bumblebees have dropped dead in one parking lot. We know that one neonicotinoid-treated seed can kill a songbird. While this is horrifying, even more horrifying are the subacute impacts on entire species and their entire populations. Subacute impacts, like others on this panel have mentioned, can affect memory, foraging capacity, and communication, causing population-level impacts such that species often cannot find their way home. Portland has put a tremendous amount of energy into restoring aquatic environments. These efforts have yielded historic successes, but neonicotinoids threaten all of that. Aquatic wildlife, such as frogs, fish, and insects, at the base of the food web are all harmed by neonicotinoids. Considering Portland's tremendous efforts at restoring these aquatic environments for salmon and trout, these impacts are extremely disturbing. The persistence of neonicotinoids, the propensity for runoff and groundwater infiltration, their cumulative and largely irreversible mode of action on invertebrates raises significant concerns. Neonicotinoid contamination levels in both surface and groundwater in the U.S. and around the world are already beyond the threshold found to kill many aquatic invertebrates. Data on surface water contaminations from surveys to date indicate that concentrations of several of the neonicotinoids on the market are high enough to be causing impacts on entire aquatic food chains. The harmful effects on insects can be found even at extremely low concentrations. Mayflies and stoneflies, important food sources for trout species, are especially sensitive to neonicotinoids, Even at very low doses, they'll experience feeding inhibition, and adults will emerge at smaller sizes. Recognizing that these impacts cannot be denied, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has banned neonicotinoids in its entire National Wildlife Refuge system, and many other cities have taken similar action. Now it is Portland's turn. There are places in Exhibit A where I would like to see the ordinance strengthened, and we can discuss those in greater detail. But this ordinance is a significant step forward, and I urge you to approve it. Thank you.
Thank you all. Questions for any of these resources?
Ms. Bird, you told me the other day, if I recall correctly, that rose midges as pests go are actually kind of cute. Is that correct?
Well, I find bugs to be sort of cute, yes. Some of us on this panel might be guilty of that, indeed. And we do recognize that they are harmful to roses, but yeah, they are, in my opinion, sort of cute.
It's sort of a lacy wing pattern, which is actually lovely.
Thank you all very much. Thank you. Some other invited folks to call? Okay. Then let's turn to the sign-up sheet of those who signed up to testify as well.
We have 26 people. The first three, please come on up, are Sharon Genasi, Janet Levinson, and Jean Camp. And they'll be followed by Scott Dolman, Jeff Stone, and Lori Vollmer.
Because of the number of people signed up, I want to ask you to try to keep your testimony to 2 minutes, please. Thanks. Welcome. Sharon, go ahead, please.
My name is Sharon Genasi.
We'll just push the button on the base of that microphone there. There you go.
My name is Sharon Genasi, and I've worked for over 20 years here in Portland on air quality issues, mostly in the Northwest neighborhood. Today, I'm testifying on behalf of Beyond Toxics in Eugene in favor of your ban. The subject of the threat seen around the country to our pollinators, honeybees and bumblebees, is dear to my heart, because my husband and I have a small organic vineyard in Southern Oregon. We face regularly the kinds of problems that a gardener in Portland would have with a rose midge. Industrial agriculture has led to a disastrous problems in the U.S. with chemical applications that kill not only pests, but are associated with a variety of serious health problems in humans as well. Organic agriculture has taught us how to use OMRI-approved products for our pests so that we can hear the frogs and birds singing in our vineyard. Portland's Rose Garden is very important to our city's image, and it's also a destination for children and adults visiting the city and living nearby. All the more reason for the City of Portland to adopt OMRI, Organic Materials Review Institute, approved products on the soil beneath the roses. In a short look around the OMRI website, I found a good list of insecticidal soaps and other products that should be used to deal with the rose midge and provide safety for the birds and helpful insects in the rose garden. It's important to pass the ordinance before you, but unfortunately, it's been weakened to allow the continued use of neonics and contains language that will allow current practices. Please tighten the ordinance to stop the use of neonics, given the serious threat to bees, and adopt instead a policy of using only OMRI-approved insecticides in our parks. Our children's health and all the animals in the parks will benefit. Thanks.
Thank you. Welcome.
I'm Janet Levinson, and I live in Northeast Portland, and I'm also a wetland biologist. I work for Land and Water Environmental Services in Douglas County. And I urge the mayor and the commissioners to ban neonicotinoid insecticides on city property. And we all know about the 7 confirmed bee kills in the last 2 years. And just from my point of view, pollinators are important because they pollinate agricultural crops and they play a vital role in the reproduction of plants. I am familiar with bumblebees and solitary bees and solitary wasps. I see them on my daily walks through my neighborhood. Urban habitat is a significant habitat that's for these pollinators. When you get outside of the city, there's a lot of non-urban habitat has been lost to development and agriculture. It is important to me to prevent further pesticide contamination in our environmental surface waters. When we use dangerous pesticides in our environment, we're not just harming bees and other pollinators, but we're fouling our own nest. And that's all.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Jean Camp. I'm the owner and operator of Paramount Pest Control. I am the first vice president of the Oregon Pest Control Association. Paramount Pest Control holds many of the city accounts. I am a vendor for your hospitals, your libraries, your fire department, your schools, your DHS offices, your correction facilities, and many other owned city properties. We serve some of the city's most sensitive accounts. I take great pride, and so does the rest of my company, in offering the finest services that we can offer the state. The banning of neonicotinoids is a huge step backwards. There is no scientific data that can solely call out neonicotinoids as the only cause in the collapse, colony collapse of our bees. There's no scientific data showing that the products containing neonicotinoids, when used according to the label, pose no unreasonable risk to humans, environment, including our pollinators. To ban neonicotinoids in the Portland area is a huge mistake. You will be taking away one of the strongest, most effective tools in the use of bed bug work, as well as other pests like ants, fleas, ticks, roaches, and termites. The interior of your public-owned buildings where bed bugs, roaches, fleas, and other pests are commonly found should not even be considered in this ban. If you ban these products on the exterior use, I believe Oregon will see issues that Europe is dealing with today, which is elevated pest levels. If a ban is put in place, I would urge that it only be temporary to allow time to evaluate the findings and base it on pesticide regulatory decisions on the entire body of the scientific literature, including studies submitted by the registrant, journal articles, and other peer-reviewed data, and not solely based on groups that have a single issue of banning all pesticides. All pesticides are not bad, and we need them. Fleas are brought into public buildings regularly. Neonicotinoids are used with integrated pest management programs with great success when other chemicals have not been working. Bed bugs are one of the most common, difficult parasites to control, and without the use of neonicotinoids on city-owned properties, your control programs will be less and will not be as effective as what my privately owned properties receive. A person can suffer up to 200 bites in a single night from a bed bug. Our children, our elderly, will suffer. They will be bitten more because control will not happen as quickly. Neonicotinoids, keep in mind, are low risk to humans and animals. Other choices like organophosphates are at more risk to humans and animals. This is what Europe is seeing. Neonicotinoids are an important part of classification of chemicals that we need. We also need our pollinators. There is no scientific data showing that banning neonicotinoid is going to improve bee health. Thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Questions? So I guess I have one, which is in these areas that have already banned neonicotinoids, what other pesticides are being used for bed bugs and those kinds of, is it the organophosphates? Is that what people have done in your business? Have they substituted?
No, we really, in Paramount's experience, we stay away from organophosphates, okay? We want to use the lowest risk to human health and to animals. And
yeah, but I'm saying
we're not
the first to this. So if in those other areas they have in effect carried out the pilot project that you've asked for, because they've already done this. So what pesticides or what approaches have pest control firms taken in the cities, Eugene, Seattle, et cetera, that have already banned this particular type of product?
Well, For Eugene, for example, seeing a rise in bed bugs in your interior, in your buildings, in your libraries, we're seeing populations grow in these public buildings. Bed bugs are off the chart, and they used to be a Portland problem. And they're in Astoria, and they're in Seaside, and they're in Eugene, and they're in Bend. It's spreading. It's not getting better. And you will not control bed bugs without the assistance of chemicals. We realize that the exterior and out in the environment, there is some reason for concern to protect our pollinators. And we join you in that effort.
But this policy, that's what this policy applies to. The city doesn't own any beds. We don't own buildings. We don't own the libraries or the
But your city workers will not be able, and your vendors will not be able to go into these city buildings and
not
use
city
these
buildings.
Products.
That's the point. The housing is not owned by the city of Portland. So this policy applies to just city of Portland properties.
Okay.
The city government, not the entire city.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's a difference between the city government and the entire geographical city, and this policy applies to the city government.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you all. Okay.
The next ones, three please. Are Scott Dolman, Jeff Stone, and Lori Vollmer, and they'll be followed by Taggart Siegel, Christine Winson, and Rich Hatfield.
Good afternoon.
I think I'm third.
Oh. Okay.
Thank you.
Why don't you go ahead, Mr. Stone?
I was going to have Mr. Dolman go first.
Are you first? Right. Go ahead, please.
I'm the lucky winner.
All right.
Excuse me. Mayor Hales, commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Scott Dolman. I'm the policy director for a group called Oregonians for Food and Shelter. We are a grassroots coalition. We're made up of farmers, foresters, and other pesticide users and focus on issues of pesticides, fertilizer, and biotechnology, all of whom have an interest in the issue of neonicotinoids. So I want to start by saying the issue of bee health is important to all Oregonians, particularly for growers. So my farmer members have a lot at stake in this conversation because we need to have pollinators for our crops, but we also need to have the tools available to be able to protect those crops. And there has to be a balance there, and we believe those two things are not mutually exclusive. Nobody wants to see adverse incidents involving pesticides and bees. The incidents we've seen over the last couple of years where pesticides were misused and there were large adverse incidents are terrible situations. They were dealt with accordingly by the Department of Agriculture and fined for the mistakes that they did make. We supported that and think that's appropriate. You need to use these tools appropriately. But we have to recognize that when something is used inappropriately, that is not a reason to ban the entire product. So why are neonicotinoids important? Neonics have been used for more than 15 years and have been widely adopted by growers and urban applicators because of their performance, their lower toxicity of mammals, including humans, and that is a very, very big point because one of the reasons these are used and used in urban environments is because of their low toxicity to people, and it's also why they're so preferred in agriculture because the workers are at a lot less risk than they will be from alternative methods. And we have to remember that there will be alternative methods. The pests are not going to go away because we stop using neonicotinoids. They're still going to exist and they're going to have to be dealt with one way or another. Neonicotinoids offer some unique environmental, economic, and public health benefits, including effective protection against invasive species such as the emerald ash borer, which can devastate an urban forest, systemic insect control that's not provided by other classes of chemicals. They are lower impact on many of the non-target organisms than the older products that they replaced, protecting natural enemies, which helps in IPM strategies. They are effective control of disease-carrying vectors, and as you just heard, some of the most effective tools for controlling bed bugs. Extended control, which limits the need for the number of applications, meaning you don't have to apply as often, and it controls pests which are resistant to other chemical classes, making them unique. I think you have to remember that pesticides go through rigorous evaluation before they are sold in the market, before you're allowed to use them. You have the EPA who evaluates the products. They also go through a registration process in Oregon. At the federal level, they're evaluated under FIFRA, the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act. Initial and ongoing re-registration of these products, which they're going through re-registration right now, is subject to a substantial review process, and they must meet the high standard of having no unreasonable adverse effect on health or the environment. This means that all of the products we are talking about today have had extensive safety testing for honeybee acute contact toxicity, honeybee toxicity of residues on foliage, and field testing for pollinators. These have been tested. So we talk a little bit about colony collapse disorder. I'm going to let Mr. Stone talk about that a little bit more. But let's look at what the science says. EPA has been petitioned several times to ban neonicotinoids. In response to a petition in 2012, EPA concluded that the EPA is not aware, and this is a direct quote, of any data indicating that honeybee declines or the incidence of colony collapse disorder in the U.S. is correlated with the use of pesticides in general or with the use of neonicotinoids in particular. Before that, in 2011, another direct quote, are not aware of any data that reasonably demonstrates that bee colonies are subject to elevated losses due to chronic exposure to pesticides. The UK Department for Environment, Food, and Rural Affairs, which it should be noted that the UK was opposed to the moratorium on the two neonicotinoids that is in place in the European Union right now. They have said, while this assessment cannot exclude rare effects of neonicotinoids on bees in the field, it suggests that effects on bees do not occur under normal circumstances. This assessment also suggests that laboratory-based studies demonstrating sublethal effects on bees from neonicotinoids did not replicate realistic conditions, but extreme scenarios. Consequently, it supports the view that the risk to bee populations from neonicotinoids as they are currently used is low. The Australian Pesticides and Veterinary Medicine Authority, and the reason I bring up Australia is because Australia uses a lot of neonicotinoid products. They are not seeing the colony collapse disorder that we're seeing here. The difference in Australia, the Varroa mite is not present. According to the Australian government, the introduction of the neonicotinoids has led to an overall reduction in the risk to the ag environment from the application of insecticides, and that Australian honeybee populations are not in decline despite the increased use of the group of insecticides in agriculture and horticulture since the mid-1990s. And just this month, results from a three-year bee study conducted by scientists from the University of Maryland, the US EPA, and USDA confirmed what other research has already shown, that field-relevant exposures of neonicotinoids have negligible effects on honeybee colony health. So in conclusion, I know I'm running out of time here. As you can see, the interaction of bees and pesticide is an issue that's being taken very seriously. We both sat on a pollinator health task force, which met throughout the last year through the state legislature. The EPA is working hard to ensure that these tools are used in an appropriate and scientifically sound manner. Pesticides are just one part of the bigger picture. I'm hopeful as you look at pollinator health, you look at other ways the city may be able to help support pollinator health going forward. But a ban by the city of Portland will result in less option to contain destructive pests with little, if any, benefit to bee populations. Neonicotinoids are a safe and effective tool for managing unwanted pests, and in light of the current science, we urge you to reconsider your proposed ban on neonics and vote no on the resolution.
Thank you.
So again, to clarify, this is about city government policy. This is about what Portland Parks uses on its property. You're aware of that, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mayor Hales, members of the City Council, I'm Jeff Stone. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. We are number one sector of agriculture. We have one of our big counties that produce quality plant materials here in Multnomah County. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you this morning, this afternoon. As Scott indicated, we were members of the Task Force for Pollinator Health. And out of those recommendations, there were several. Banning neonicotinoids was not one of them. And so I raise this issue because let's talk. When the bee die-off happened, it was on National Pollinator Day, which was not super awesome, and it was one of my members, landscapers. They did not follow the label. And that caused me to do a crash course on really what is happening with the bee population. So I was able to testify before Congress. I learned a lot, actually, from USDA, and I want to share just a little bit about what contributes to the pollinator decline. First of all is nutrition. Just like anything else, bees need to have forage and a variety of things to eat. They have to travel farther in order to get the proper food that they need. The second is biodiversity within the bees themselves. And this, we were working with the beekeepers to try to get more biodiversity within those hives. The last is the varroa mite. It has a really cool, well, it's not really cool, but it's awful, varroa the destructor. The varroa mite is the biggest threat to the bee colony. Now, this is the size of a varroa mite to the human body. So make it equivalent to a bee. So it's very small, but this would be our size. Picture 12 of these like little vampires all over your body. And then when you go home, I have two daughters, then it spreads all over there and it spreads and it spreads. It is devastating to the bee population. So what we have urged is greater research, alternatives for neonicotinoids long-term. But the fact is they are a very effective way for the nursery and greenhouse industry to control pests. So I thank you for your time. I know I'm a little over.
So again, I want to kind of follow up on Commissioner Fritz's question. This ordinance, if we pass it, will affect what we do.
Yes.
It won't affect what nurseries or farms or even commercial nurseries within the city do, not to mention the ones that are outside our city limits. So I guess I'm a little puzzled at the scale of your reaction to what we would do ourselves here. Please.
The reaction is natural about having fear about the health of the pollinator community. But the chief of staff to Commissioner Fritz mentioned that nursery stock and everything that you buy from have to be neonic free. I don't know exactly if you know what you're getting into when you ask nurseries to produce nursery stock. I don't recall anybody coming to the association or any of my members asking our opinion about this. So while the economic impact on the very big nursery industry on the city of Portland is relatively small, the fact of the matter is that we want you to make the best informed decision based on the science that is present. There's a lot of science on the extremes on both sides, and we're trying not to feed the narrative on the extremes on this. So that's the level. That's why I'm
so
here.
You think it'll
you
be
today.
Impractical for nurseries to supply product to us after this ordinance goes into effect?
My nursery members are very adaptable to market conditions. But I would say, Mayor, in all honesty, I think that when you have production, it's just not one little patch. It's a production method for an entire nursery.
Right.
So
no, I understand. I'm following that. We buy a lot of trees and plants. So.
And that's why the phasing plan is the goal at the end of 2017 for the purchasing of the plants, recognizing it takes a while to grow them. And in fact, Exhibit A is the pilot project that you talked about in your testimony. We're going to be doing a test just to help the industry find out what else might work.
Okay. I have a technical question to file away. Maybe park staff can answer it, or maybe you can because you represent. But I have conflicting personal threads pulling on me on this issue. My father kept bees, but he also loved elm trees. Mm-hmm. And we're using a systemic pesticide to keep our elms alive. Do we know whether that particular treatment is using neonicotinoids, or if it is there a substitute? Because my wife and other volunteers in my neighborhood go out and inoculate the elm trees every year. So want to save the bees, also want to save the elm trees, are both mm-hmm. possible. I don't know if you have an answer to that question.
Boy, I admit, I don't want your father to be in trouble.
well, he's not.
Perhaps there's a way that I can illustrate it that is what we're faced with. So there's a garden center that there was a temporary ban on neonics, and they couldn't. It was inside in a greenhouse, but they couldn't use it. So they had to use an alternative, which is far more toxic. They have to use it more often. It's less effective, and it actually is harsher on human health. So there are trade-offs, Mayor, in terms of what type of pesticide you use. Someone mentioned that pesticides kill things. Absolutely, they do. Mm-hmm. They do. We need to make sure, though, that the pesticide that is being used for the purpose it was designed to do, for the purpose of creating pest and disease-free plants.
And I believe the further answer to your question, Mayor, is the elm inoculant is not a neonicotinoid. I believe there is another kind of tree disease that is bone.